The following podcast is an exclusive presentation of Project Entertainment Network.
Bizarre.
Bazan. Bazan. Bazan.
Bazan. Bazan. Bazan. Bazan. Bazan.
This is Bazan, the Bizarre and Weird Fiction Podcast. With me, your host, Mr. Frank Zongers, so wonderful to see your beautiful faces return to my speakers where you can listen to me another week. Of course, I can't see you, but you don't know that, do you, Zongers? There is one thing I know, Zongers, and that is you can't hear or see this podcast without the help from our fine sponsors. I am talking about, of course, the legendary Subculture Corsets and Clothing. They can be found at the Avenues Mall in Jacksonville, Florida, or if you don't happen to live in the Jacksonville, Florida area, you can always visit their store online at www.subculturecorsets.com. There are those that don't prefer the www, in which case their web address is subculturecorsets.com. Their Zongers are in store. You will find the finest in rockabilly, pinup, steampunk, goth, and of course, the best corsets that money can and will buy, Zongers. No cheap stuff here. This is clothing and corsetry designed and made to last a lifetime, or at least a long time. That is because Subculture Corsets only supplies the top quality clothing money can buy. You can be assured that when you shop at Subculture Corsets, you're going to get the best quality clothing there is. And Zongers, let me help you out here a little bit. When you shop Subculture Corsets, you can enter the promotional code BAZONG at checkout and receive 10% off your entire order, Zongers. Your entire order of clothing, corsetry, shoes, accessories, and even books. So load that card up, Zongers, because the more you buy, the more you are going to save with Subculture Corsets, Bazong, and the Project Entertainment Network. And of course, shipping is always free. And that being said, thank you, Subculture Corsets, for continuing to sponsor the Project Entertainment Network and Bazong in particular. Because without Subculture Corsets, I couldn't bring you our repeat guest this week, the one and only Mr. Andrew James Stone, the author of the newly released All Hail the House Gods, a book that has the ears and eyes and hearts of a lot of people who read, write, and love bizarro fiction. And that, of course, is why we are talking to Andrew James Stone once again. We had a wonderful conversation. When I say we, I do mean me, Zongers. It's just me. I act like as this Bazong entity of many, but it's just Mr. Frank, right? That's what I do. So it is this Bazong entity. This Zongers, this interview we're about to get into is a great interview. I really love talking to Andrew James Stone, so it was a treat for me to talk to him once again. But this interview is the last interview before I head out to Williamsburg, Virginia to do Bazong Live this Saturday, August 4th at, I think it's 3:30 p.m. in the afternoon. It's sometime in the middle of the afternoon. If you're going to be at Scares of Care, Zongers, Bazong Live, as it was originally envisioned as a game show, will take place this August 4th at Scares of Care Charity Weekend, Saturday, August 4th at, I think, 3:30. Be in the audience. Be a part of the action. Maybe be a contestant in the bizarro game show Bazong. And we're going to have a lot of fun there for that hour of Bazong Live. Next week, Zongers, I'll be coming home on the day that Bazong normally releases. So you're not going to get the Bazong Live experience then. That's going to be 2 weeks away. But this here is the final episode before I head to Williamsburg, Virginia, and do Bazong Live for your butts. I hope to see you there. And if I don't, I hope you listen in the subsequent weeks when I release said thing. But until then, enough about Bazong Live and more about this week's guest, the one and only Andrew James Stone. Oh, give us the gong. Zongers, it is my pleasure to welcome back to Bazong this week a gentleman we had on a number of months ago to talk about his previous work. He has just come out with a new book very recently on the day of independence, as a matter of fact, a book it's got a lot of buzz going on. So without further ado, welcome back to Bazong, the author of the newly released All Hail the House Gods, Andrew James Stone. Welcome back to Bazong.
Thanks for having me back. It's great.
It's awesome when I can do these because, it's been about, I think, 9 or 10 months since we last spoke. We talked about your first book, The Mortuary Monster. And during that interview, you were talking about your release, All Hail the House Gods. And here it is. So it's a treat when we make it that far and now we can talk about this new book. So All Hail the House Gods. Tell me what it's all about.
So it's a weird dystopian horror novel that generally kind of explores various ways of revolution against a totalitarian government, except the totalitarian government is giant sentient houses that eat one human child sacrifice a day. And the humans in the book, their sole purpose for existence is to just create offspring to feed the houses each day. So yeah, exploring revolution in that sort of setting, I guess.
I love the concept. I told you that when you first told me back the last interview. But I'm curious, why houses? Why did you pick houses in this as the thing to eat humans in this book?
So as I wrote the book, I kind of have a good reason now. But the original reason was when I was in grad school, one of my classmates over like winter break had this writing group that was, they were all like coming into town to stay at her place. And she invited our class as well. So I went one day and one of the guys was doing this like workshop, I don't know, break the ice writing kind of shit. And everyone got an image and they were supposed to write something based off said image. And my image was of two like medieval, but not like poor, like well-to-do towns, I guess, separated by a bridge, and just seemed like the houses separated by the bridge is kind of what, why houses, I guess, because that's where we're at the first page of this book. It's not the first page in the book, but when I submitted the book, it was the first page. It kind of got switched around. What's funny is at the time when that workshop was, or like that little writing exercise was happening, I was editing The Mortuary Monster, which obviously we talked about last time I was on the show, and I really hated the workshop. Like, I just want to edit my fucking book. Like, I don't want to have to write this dumb, do this dumb exercise. But thankfully I did the dumb exercise because it turned into this, however, a few years later, I guess. So that's why houses. The reason I'd say now, I think, like, the reason it kind of grew into, and probably really the real reason, like the way my brain works, is I think a lot of people today find happiness in a home, mm-hmm. and we like houses consume our lives in the sense that we spend all of our time in it. We feel anxious or like unhappy or unfulfilled if we aren't in one or don't have one. Especially as like growing up and being young, I think I'm a millennial. I don't know. I'm 25, whatever that makes me. Just like most people in my age are, and younger, it's even worse. Like, can afford a house probably for the foreseeable future. And I'm living with my in-laws. I know most of my friends are either living with their parents or whatever, because they can't afford a house. And this idea of like, I don't know, it's kind of, the book, I guess, is kind of a warning too, like not to find your happiness in a home. Like, don't let that be the thing that you live for that makes you happy, because it's just material objects and you could lose it at any point, and don't let it consume you.
I like how, you know, it starts out that you were just given a house as a writing prompt essentially. And, but then through writing it, you know, you found the reason why it is houses. I mean, that's so much, especially with Bizarro, because you're trying to twist up something normal into something weird. And typically, or a lot of times, that's what a Bizarro book does, take something a normal non-sentient object, makes this sentient, and then puts it into a real world situation and figures out if this thing, like a house, were real, were a being, how would it interact with the world? So then you find your reasons. What makes the house the monster that it is? And those are the things you stated. So, I mean, that's truly, it's funny. The prompt, I guess, could have gone anyway. It wasn't necessarily a bizarro prompt that you were working on, correct?
No, not at all.
So, you know, you took a simple writing prompt and made it bizarro. I mean, that is right there, to me, almost like the heart of how bizarro is. Do you think you could have made it not a house, something else? Because you said, how far did you get in the prompt? And then what made you go back to that idea of making it bigger into a book?
So for the prompt, it was only a page. But I really liked the idea, and I took a short story class the next semester, so I wrote like a 10-page short story, which was the original All Hail the House Gods. But it wasn't working as a short story. It needed to be longer. So I knew I'd eventually make it longer, but not for a while, because then I wrote my thesis, which was the dinosaur book, and was just like other books. And then finally I was done with grad school, and I decided to get back to All Hail the House Gods and expand that. But I think the reason it stuck with me all this time was because it feels really relevant, I think, to what's going on right now, just like in our world.
Mm-hmm.
And also just like the idea of like being consumed by the home, like this thing we find comfort in. But I don't know. I guess by the time it was a short story, I was pretty happy like with the idea, and I thought it was pretty solid, which is why I just expanded it into the novella, and I kept kind of the frame and the structure of the story, but just made everything longer and went deeper into the characters' lives and the world and all of that.
Now, at what point did, when you had it fleshed out into a full book, did you decide you were going to shop it? Or was it something basically, because you worked with Strange House / Rooster Republic before, so was it already something like they would just want something else from you, or did you have to sort of pitch this idea to them?
So I pitched it to them, but before I turned it into a book, like when it was still just the 10 pages and I haven't revisited it yet and rewrote it, I pitched the idea to them and they liked it and they took it and they were like, yeah, just send us it when it's done. Yeah, like by that point, I hadn't signed the contract when I pitched it. Like after I pitched it, and when I was writing it, but it was pretty sure that it, like 95% certain that they would take it and that I'd work with them on it.
And that's interesting because that all comes in and around a time where there was some, shall we say, just question about what the future for Rooster Republic and Strange House would actually be. You know, they were trying to right the ship. So did you have any? Did you have any misgivings, any kind of pullback? Do I really want to work with them, or did you just know they were solid the whole way through, and that's what the way you wanted to go?
Knew they were solid. I mean, I don't know which instance you're specifically referring to. I guess to be fair, like I know when they first took over, I was pretty wary about working with them, and they kind of had to convince me to send them the mortuary monster, because that was like one of the first things Nick and Don put out since they took over the Rooster and Strange House.
Okay, I thought that came out like just before all that changeover to Don and Nick.
Oh no, yeah, they were the reason I sent it to Strange House. Like I was kind of worried about working with Strange House, and then Don and Nick sort of gave me their like new vision and what they wanted to do with it. Mm-hmm. And I kind of dug what they were doing, so I sent it to them. And yeah, that was the first book they put out, and it was supposed to be like one of the first, I think, signals, I guess, of the direction they were taking the press, I think.
Right.
So that was kind of like, so by the time this one came around, that was already, had been done. And
yeah, you were confident that that they were doing right by Strange House and Rooster Republic.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, that leads into my next bit of questioning then, because with All Hail the House Gods, I got to tell you, you know, interviewing people since we last talked. The book has come up so many times. People talking about, you know, how eager they are to read it. Of course, lately it's just come out at the beginning of July. So, you know, you're starting to see reviews and stuff now. It's got a lot of people talking, which is pretty exciting. I mean, even as far as, it was a piece on Lit Reactor by Gabino Iglesias. So it's got a lot of people talking. How much of a boost has that been to the whole thing?
Yeah, that's been really excellent. And it's been great. I've had a number of, it just kind of got like, I don't know, people who tweet a lot and are like Goodreads started like tweeting about it, like reviewers and stuff. And like, and also just like people who have a lot of followers on Twitter and Goodreads who like recommend books, but aren't necessarily like book reviewers as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been nice. I've been getting a number of sales and people like reading it and contacting me in regards because of that, and seemed like pretty direct correlation, I guess, between them discussing and being excited about the book and its jump in sales. And also just, yeah, the reviews have been really good, and that's been really helpful as well. I don't know the specific numbers at this point, because I haven't seen them yet, but I believe it's doing quite well, so...
It sure seems like it. Was it almost by design though that this, because a lot of this buzz was, like I said, leading up to like before it was even released. There were people telling me things I'm looking forward to. All Hail the House Gods was on the list. Like it was a hot anticipated bizarro book of 2018 without a doubt. And there, by my estimation, haven't been many, and a handful at best. And you were in and amongst them. Was it something where Don and Nick put that, like, to me, like, it seems like, of course, to get an article on Lit Reactor is pretty big. It's not Publishers Weekly, but it's still pretty big time for the indie market to get spotlighted on Lit Reactor. Did they kind of give it to Gabino and say, hey, man, check this out? Or was it just Gabino, checked it out on his own and said, this is what you need to be reading?
Yeah, so they got some like print ARCs for this one that we sent out. They asked me who I wanted to send like ARCs to, and we sent out a handful of those to different reviewers and people. Gabino was one of them, and that I think is what generated that sort of buzz, mm-hmm. Which is nice. Usually they just do like ebook ARCs,
right?
Which people less often like read beforehand and stuff.
Yeah.
So it was nice that they did print on this one, because I asked them to do that and they went with it. So I think that helped quite a bit for this book.
And it's interesting you bring that up too, because I've noticed as a published release, it's only currently available as a paperback. It is not an ebook release as of yet. Is that going to change too, or is it at least for now going to be only paperback released?
No, that should change any day at this point. They're just kind of waiting. It's, I believe, finalized. They're just waiting for it to sync through with Amazon's.
It's imminent.
I'm not sure if they've submitted it yet or not, but if they have, it just takes a few days to like show up. If they haven't, they're
right
gonna send it in any day. So there should be an ebook fairly soon.
Nice. It's imminent. An imminent ebook digital release.
Yeah. I'm not positive on the like specific
right
time or day, but yeah, it's very soon.
Very cool. It's comforting to know that though I would love to read it, it's nice to not have it take up so much room in my house. So I'm a big fan of digital reading.
Yeah, no, so, that will be up shortly for you. Just you specifically
me. Ain't I a lucky soul? So no, yeah. that's cool to hear. For me to hear that, Strange House / Rooster Republic, they're doing their due diligence, not only in getting the books out and continuing being phenomenal presses, but I mean they're also working the marketing end really well. It looks like, as exampled by the buzz around All Hail the House Gods. It's good to hear that that they're doing right by the publishers. I mean, I was really rooting for them. I knew when Don and Nick took over, I mean, the cards were almost stacked against them. That was a really almost dead entity, and they've really rallied around. It's taken some time, but They've really rallied around, and it seems like they're doing right by everybody, and they're continuing to do right.
Yeah, definitely. And they've released some pretty great books, both with Strange House and Rooster, too. And this one's pretty old. It came out around Mortuary Monster, but Bradley Sands' book that they put out was super phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
Liquid Status, I believe it was called.
Mm-hmm.
Or is, but yeah, they've done some cool stuff.
Yeah, and I was looking at their upcoming releases, like from here forward into the new year, and I mean they've got some pretty big titles coming up. It's going to be an exciting press to watch for sure. And you're almost like, you know, on the vanguard of that wave of this new wave coming out from both presses.
Yeah, they're doing exciting things, definitely.
I want to circle back real quick to the house idea, because something else struck me about this too is I've been noticing houses kind of a lot in Bizarro, and especially like Jeff Burke just recently had a book come out where he uses basically sentient haunted houses as a piece for a story, the very ineffective haunted house. So it's kind of interesting. You know, I'm sure you didn't plot and plan to do houses in Bizarro, but it's nearly a theme now, I think. Are you feeling that at all?
Yeah, I kind of see that. I mean, there's also God of Hungry Walls and mm-hmm. House of Houses, Donahue's, which was probably one of the first ones. So, yeah, I think that's relevant.
It's all too around that sort of idea, like you presented, like, as you know, a house is our safe space as humans, and a lot of them play off of that, you know, twisting that, and what if you know, it's home sweet home is not home sweet home any longer, and life changes around because of that when it's not safe to go into the house.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of that's always been a sort of metaphor, story in horror, mm-hmm. going back as probably as long as horror's been around. So I think it's certainly like steeped its way into Bizarro.
Now, like you said, usually, you know, it's always been around. It's usually the concept of the haunted house. Do you feel that All Hail the House Gods is a haunted house book?
I don't think so. Maybe it could be because it's a horror book and the houses are like sentient, but it's not like haunted. The houses like walk and talk and eat and have furniture orgies and stuff. So the houses like are, I don't know, any other sort of character. They're not so much haunted as they are living beings. I guess haunted house for kind of living beings, but I don't know. I feel like something about it's different.
we got to stop the presses here. You said furniture orgies.
Yeah.
That's a thing that happens in All Hail the House God, a furniture orgy?
It is this thing that happens.
Ooh, my goodness.
So
that now there's something you could sell a book on.
Yeah. So I don't want to talk too much more about that.
Yeah, don't give it away.
Because it happens, like, you discover things before it gets to that.
Uh-huh.
And talking about it, have to, like, talk about what you sort of discover.
Ooh. Is it almost like an Eyes Wide Shut with houses type of situation?
Kind of.
Now I'm 13 times more intrigued.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, maybe you should lead with that.
The furniture, yeah, maybe.
Their orgy thing. That might, you know, sex sells. So I always get excited about that. I tell the story about a writer I pal around when he wrote a book that he kind of pitches as vampires without vampires, a reimagination of Suki Stackhouse. And I finally read the book, and it's just like the filthiest, dirtiest sex book ever. And he's always shy about pitching it that way or even selling it to people because of the sort of nasty sex content in it. And I just bump him out of the way because he's not selling his book. And I go, you want to read this book? It is filthy, dirty, and people buy it like crazy once they hear that. So, like, don't ever sell the sex stuff short.
No, definitely. So, the whole world revolves around, like, sex in a weird way. Like, the way that, I mean, people, the only sport they have is erotic recreation when they're kids. So all they do is, like, have sex until they can produce, and once they produce, then they're stuck with that person for life, producing a child a year for the to go towards the lottery for the houses. Gotcha. And, yeah, but just the way they talk about sex, like, their whole life is consumed by houses. So, like, the body parts and actions and everything uses, like, house-type terminology and not human terminology. And just, like, the idea of the home kind of is so ingrained in these people's world because all they do is produce for the home and die in the home. And so, yeah, like, everything they talk about and do, they see it through kind of the lens of a house in a weird way.
So this is really a situation where the people have to live in the houses. It's sort of sacrificing the sacrificial lamb to the volcano god type of a situation. Is that
The people on their side, like the human side of the bridge, live in tents because houses eat people. But yeah, they live their whole life to create potential offerings and sacrifices that will walk across the bridge and feed themselves. Okay. To the house.
Wow. Wow. No, it's such a killer concept. There's so many ways I'm sure you could play with that. It's no wonder you found it exciting to play in a world like that.
Yeah, it was pretty fun to write. Definitely. I wrote this book kind of weird. There's like love spurts and then downtime, so it wasn't fun in that sense. But when I was writing, it was fun.
So from here, I mean, the book's out. You got all the buzz. Everything's looking good. Where do you take the book from here? Are you going to get out on the road, as it were? Do you have some appearances lined up? Are you going to try and do that type of thing? What are you going to do to further the success of All Hail the House Gods?
Yeah, so I'm doing a like book launch reading. It's not really like the book's out, but I guess like the first official reading where I'll be selling copies in person at the end of August. At Bookshow LA, which is where I did the book lunch reading for The Mortuary Monster. Mm-hmm. And I'll be reading with, like, Laura Lee Barr will be there, and Cody Goodfellow, Anthony Trevino, and a few people. So that should be fun. Yeah, it's a bummer it's so far from, like, the release date, but just timing with me and then Jen, who owns the store, just kept on missing. So that's happening August 26th. And then at this point, I don't have other readings plan, but I'm meaning to throw them together. I've just been busy and kind of lazy, so I need to throw some more readings together, and that's kind of the goal, I guess, and then just keep on getting it into people's hands and kind of keep finding ways to keep the buzz going, I guess, on social media. I did an interview with Anthony Trevino that should be going out shortly, so that will be there. And then a few other reviews I think are supposed to be coming out at some point. So yeah, just kind of doing some appearances in LA and California and maybe other places. I don't know. See how life and money is.
Right.
But that, and then mixed with social media appearances. So
of course,
I think that's kind of the plan at this point.
It's as good a plan as any. I mean, of course, getting out there and doing the readings and stuff, I'm sure, is like the biggest thing you can probably do for the book.
Yeah, I think so. But I think so, like, only if you go out to other places, like if you're reading in the same city all the time, that's, I don't think, as helpful. Mm-hmm. I mean, other people, I guess, could be, like, walking through and stuff if it's a cool bookstore, but I don't know how many people, like, spend a lot of time in bookstores anymore.
Right.
But even just, like, having a reading allows you to talk about the book on social media without being annoying because you're not advertising for the book directly again.
Right.
So
you still think, more and more I hear writers talking about, like, you know, social media as far as a marketing platform, it's dead. Facebook, forget it. Twitter is really tailing off, even Instagram. And, you know, it's, well, even to a degree, Instagram's okay. But, You know, it's like Snapchat knows, and you know, but still, by and large, social media is not. It's like a dying art as far as book marketing. But you're saying like there's still life there. There's still an importance to social media for getting the word of the book out there.
I hope so.
Good answer. Good answer.
But I would even say like Lit Reactor is social media, and like all these book blogs and things like that are all social media. I think, I don't know.
Well, so I agree. I think the blogs are making a return, especially where marketing and generating word of mouth and buzz are concerned. I think they died out for a while as things like Twitter and Facebook became the primary means of getting the word out there. But I think the book blogs are coming back, and especially places like you said, like Lit Reactor, people are paying, I think, more and more attention to. Ginger Nuts of Horror is another one that comes off the top of my head, but there's a lot of them now, and there's book review sites out there, blogs out there that are gonna, I think, gain more and more prominence and get more focus on, as opposed to getting on Facebook and following this guy's author page. And I think that sort of stuff is kind of dead, even though it's still an important tool to keep, I think, for everybody. Just to like not say buy my book, but just to be social and go, oh yeah, and I have this thing out there too, you know. It kind of works itself into an ordinary conversation.
Definitely. So, and yeah, I mean, I think social media might be less effective than it used to be, but at this point, I don't know of a better method to reach like people across country or the planet. Working with a small press as well, like an indie press, I think social media is more important. Obviously, if it's a bigger press, it doesn't matter as much. At least I don't think it matters as much. Maybe it does these days. I don't know how much big publishers do for their writers. But yeah, I think like if your book's not going to be in Barnes & Noble or really like specific chain bookstores, I think social media is a big way to reach people.
You know, another thing I'm seeing lately, and you're not part of the thing, but I'm sure you're seeing it too. I mean, just recently, even in Spain, the Ochini Press just had a big Bizarro thing that looked like it generated a lot of interest in Bizarro over in Spain. Laura Lee Barr, of course, was over there. Lisa Cantoral, Christoph Paul, and it was almost like BizarroCon for Spain. And I'm seeing a lot of Bizarro writers signing, you know, German language, Spanish language, different language contracts over in Europe. Are you seeing that too?
Yeah, definitely. And I was actually at Laura's place a few days ago when we were talking about this. But just what's cool about when people work with, when their works translate and they work with foreign presses, is a lot of times the way they do genre in European countries is different. Mm-hmm. So, like, I was just talking to Laura, so I'll use her for example. Like, her books in Spain are sold among, like, bestsellers here that are translated. Yeah. Like, the genre difference of what's a bestseller in the U.S. and what's an indie book kind of gets lost, and they all get sold together.
Right. Just
So yeah, like her book is doing pretty well in Spain. Like she was in bookstores and people, or like at coffee shops, and people would be reading her book, which doesn't really happen here.
No.
So, and that's also the case in France. And I don't know. I have no idea about Germany or Italy, but. Yeah, a lot of the translation, like when books are translated, they get sold on like alongside bestsellers here. So the reach is a lot bigger, I think.
That's an interesting tidbit. I did not realize is like you all of a sudden become put on a level playing field just by virtue of English language translation is what you all have in common.
Yeah. So. Yeah, it's really bizarre. I don't know why that happened specifically. And I don't know if that happens for like every translated book or only specific ones, or if it depends on the press. I'm sure there's lots of like variables.
Right.
But just like talking with Laura, her book, she was saying her books do way better in Spain than they do here. So, and she's not there advertising or doing like work or anything like that. She does all that over here. So
yeah, it's an incredible thing that, you know, I'm seeing a lot very lately, like especially within the last 6 months. I had Hector Camacho on Bazan quite a while ago when he was just first putting out like little bizarro anthologies translated to Spanish. And I was really curious about it. And he's very well spoken for somebody who is in Spain, speaks Spanish. He's still well spoken in English. We had a great conversation, but since that conversation, the work he's done over there, it's like I'm just seeing, you know, just through pictures, through social media, what's going on over there. He's doing tremendous work. And like I said, I see people signing German contracts, French contracts, in the Netherlands. There's a Donnie, he's doing work. So, I mean, there's some stuff going on. I think it looks like a market that's going to explode.
Definitely. I think so. Yeah, Hugo's great. He's doing rad stuff. I met him at BizarroCon last year. Out in Portland, so that's, yeah, it's really cool to see how well his press is doing. But yeah, no, translated works I think are rad.
Now with a guy like you, I mean, you met Hugo, did you recognize at the time, like this guy, I gotta get friends with this guy because there could be something going on there. Did you kind of see that maybe this is where things could go and kind of schmooze him up a little bit? Maybe you want a little mortuary monster action?
I don't know if I like schmoozed him up by any means, but before the con, him, Brandon, Vidito, I hope I said his last name right, sorry, and John Wayne Cominale. I also hope I'm saying his last name right. I can't speak right now.
I know that's correct.
Huh?
I know that's correct.
Oh, thank God. So anyways, yeah, like we all stayed at Danger's place the day or two before the con. So we just hung out and like kicked back and stuff. So I got to know him relatively well, but just mostly hung out. I wasn't trying to like sell him anything or anything like that. Just hung out and tried to be friends, I guess.
Hi, my name is Andrew James Stone. Please don't forget that.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd love it. If he or anyone translated my work, that'd be awesome. But at this point, I haven't really talked to anyone about that. So
yeah, well, I am curious because, I mean, the Mortuary Monster had its own buzz, you know, as your freshman release. It had a pretty good buzz and people talking about it, good reviews. And now it seems like an even bigger buzz now for All Hail the House Gods. So it is sort of, you know, to see if you've caught anybody's attention over there in Europe type of situation.
Yeah, not at this point, but hopefully that will change.
One can only Hugo. Hugo, are you listening? I don't know how to say that in Spanish. I don't have my Google Translate handy, but, you know, it's right there. It's primed for the taking. All Hail the House Gods. En Español.
Yeah, that'd be rad.
That would be rad.
So
now, as you mentioned before, there was some collegiate work you had to do between Mortuary Monster and All Hail the House Gods that kind of held you back some. Is there some collegiate work still in your life that will kind of slow down another release for you, or are you already working on the new thing?
I'm working on a new book that I've been working on for a while now that's been going slower than I like. I think I have around 12,000 words now. It'll probably end up being 30,000 or just over that. It's a sea monster story that Cameron Pierce kind of wrote the pitch and title and stuff for me. I just give him, he's like, give me some sea creatures. So I'm like, cool. So because I was talking to him about the idea kind of at BizarroCon as well, and he's like, oh, I'll help you out. So that was nice. But I guess to answer your question, yes, to teaching adjunct university. I just finished a class in the spring, so I guess didn't just finish, at Biola, which is like a super conservative evangelical school, which is a really weird place for me to teach. So that was interesting. I think the students liked me, which was cool. It was surprising in a lot of ways, some good, some bad. But yeah, so that was that. But in the fall, I'll be teaching again, at this time at California Institute of the Arts, which I've taught it before. That's where I went for grad school. But the class I pitched for this, and college is cool because you just pitch classes that you want to teach and they either take them or don't.
Right.
Because it's like an art school, so there's not any like real English classes. They don't have an English undergrad program or anything like that. They took the class I pitched called Intro to Bizarro Fiction. So I'm teaching just my friends, basically. I'm just teaching a class on Bizarro. So that will be really fun.
That is too cool.
Yeah.
Do you feel well equipped to teach a class on, you know, Introduction to Bizarro?
Yeah, definitely. I've taught Evolution of the Weird there before, is what I called it, which was kind of a way to dip my toes into teaching Bizarro there. Like, we start with Alice in Wonderland, which isn't that far back as far as weird fiction, but it's also a like 14-week class, so it's as far back for the sake of the course I wanted to go. And looked at just like different genre works, so like horror, sci-fi, magical realist, things like that, that kind of all contributed to Bizarro leading up to the last quarter of the class was just Bizarro fiction. We did a number of short stories, and then the book we read, it was Long Form Religious Porn by Laura, and she came and visited the class one day, which I'll probably be doing again, that book, and have her visit.
That's very cool. I'll shoot you this question off the hip, because it's something I do a lot when I read a book that I think is really good intro to Bizarro stuff. And I always mention in my review, this is a great, you know, book for Bizarro 101. So just off the top of your head, rattle off a couple of books that you think are good for your Bizarro 101 introduction class.
So Long Form Religious Porn, I think, is great. I think The Terrible Thing That Happens by Carlton Mellick III is great. Sif by Brian Allen Carr, or really anything by Brian Allen Carr, is pretty wonderful. Sam Pink's stuff, I think, is good for college-age students, or high school. I don't know. A lot of university age people like super dig his work. Right. I taught his short stories or like flash fiction there, and it was like half the students' favorite works were his.
Nice.
Yeah. And then I guess a lot of that stuff's kind of like Bizarro Light, which I think is a good introduction. But then on the other extreme, I think something, if you're going to go like really hardcore Bizarro, I think great introductions are like Space Walrus by Donaghy, or, Dungeons and Drag Queens by Emma Johnson. Mm-hmm. Cause those are like Dungeons and Drag Queens is just like such a like bizarro concept and title. And it's like so bizarro that it's really fun. It's like, I guess it's so obviously weird that like, okay, cool. Like you're kind of more with it without having to know what Bizarro is.
Mm-hmm.
And Space Walrus is just such a great fucking character study of a walrus with a crush on a human. So yeah,
very cool. I often cite like one of my favorite ones to cite in there would be Island of the Super People. I think that's great. And along the same lines with you, Emma Johnson's Sick Pack, I think, was really fantastic Bizarro 101 type of stuff.
Yeah, I haven't read Sick Pack yet. I have it, but yeah, Island of the Super People is fun, and it's a great correlation with like Marvel blowing up and all the superhero films out there.
Yeah, and especially like my thing also is like easily accessible, not so weird as like anybody who's not prepared for it will be like turned off because it's just too crazy. Like it has to be like there has to be an accessibility to the public at large for it, you know, and say, yo, no, this is Bizarro.
Yeah, definitely. I think starting texts are better if it's less like the less out there Bizarro, the less bizarre Bizarro, less truly Bizarro, I guess, in the shock sense.
Right. You wouldn't want to start anybody off with the Ask Goblins of Auschwitz. I don't think.
No. Yeah, that's pretty out there. So, yeah, like for me, I got into Bizarro through Brian Allen Carzidi and the Low-Hung Hands and Sam Pink. So, like, Lazy Fascist and the other one wasn't Lazy Fascist. I forgot who put out Brian's first novella. But, I mean, but then he went on to work with Lazy Fascist, so same kind type of literature.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's kind of what got me into Bizarro, and for a while it's still kind of like, eh, Bizarro's weird, but then I was finally like, fuck, like, Cameron Pierce edits all these books, I should read his work, and then I started reading him through Eraserhead and then Carlton, which I, like, instantly loved all that, so I was like, okay, stop being a snob, I guess, was kind of the, kind of had to admit, like, I really dig this stuff.
So I'm excited. Do you have any gauge of how successful that class might be? Have people signed up for it yet, or it's not quite at that point?
Haven't opened up to signing up yet, but I'm pretty positive it will be really successful. Like when I did Evolution of the Weird, it was full by the first day. And I get along with a lot of students there and have really good relationships with a number of students.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of all that, the animation there is really big. Like, animation's what they're known for.
Right.
And a lot of their students go on to work with, like, Adult Swim or Pixar or Disney, which is all kind of Bizarro-esque. Like, animation's pretty bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of, I think, all ties in together. So they really like Bizarro because it's relates to what they're working on.
Right.
Like, my former students, they did, they recently got mentioned this big, like, up and coming LGBTQ, like, animators for this, short they did that was, like, 4 minutes long about someone who sweats hot dogs and is, like, a Bizarro type animated text that they, created when they're in my class, or not, like, in my class, but when, while they were taking my class. So I think it's, like, something the students there are pretty, like, they dig it quite a bit.
Now, do you think the typical student would look in the class schedule offering and see the introduction to Bizarro and understand, like, oh, this could be, like, you know, the Rick and Morty stuff, the Adult Swim stuff, and head in that direction? Because to me, it seems like you said, there's so much Bizarro out there in the mainstream media that's, you know, never gets necessarily equated to Bizarro fiction, which would help so much Bizarro fiction in and of itself if they could go, well, this exists too in book form. Do you think that by and large the college age kids out there do recognize that?
I think so. I mean, it helps that there's, like, a paragraph course description.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if the title itself would do anything, but the title paired with the course description, I think, is helpful. And I talk about kind of some of the text that I'll teach in that, or the, like, its similarities to work. So,
yeah. So you make in the description of the course, you make those leaps from, you know, the, like you said, the Adult Swim type of thing where they would latch on and go, oh yeah, I need to be in this class.
Yeah. And also, I've kind of been talking about Bizarro a lot at CalArts since being a student and since finishing. It's kind of grown, and I think a lot of people there, for sure, in, like, the grad writing programs are aware of it. But I think even, like, there have been a number of undergrad classes that have taught those sorts of texts. So I think there's at least some awareness with the number of students there of what Bizarro is.
Well, that's good. I mean, that's fantastic stuff. I mean, just that you're teaching a course for Bizarro, you know, to because you were at an evangelical institute at one point, you're doing the Lord's work. You're spreading the good word of Bizarro out there. So, I mean, that can only be a win. You know, you're educating our nation's youth, and you're introducing them to Bizarro. What more could we possibly ask for from any responsible American citizen?
Definitely. I don't know. And to be clear, when I was at the evangelical school, I was teaching composition.
You were in teaching.
So that was boring stuff. But, I mean, I taught Dennis Johnson, which was fun, and some text. But, yeah, it was more of just, like, argumentative essay work. That's why I CalArts is cool, because I get to propose, like, and create any course I want.
Right. And it's got to be so much more engaging for you to teach a course on Bizarro as opposed to teaching a course on exposition.
Definitely. So, I mean, teaching a course on Bizarro is much more engaging than anything else just because, like I said before, like, I'm literally just teaching all my friends.
Yeah, that's so. That's the greatest thing in the world. More people should be able to do that. It should be. I mean, if my college experience, I was in college begging for just like, can somebody please teach a course on horror, please? And
yeah,
and it didn't exist. To the point I was in an English class, and I just wanted to write a paper on Stephen King's Thinner just because I wanted to read it at the time, and the teacher who was young. Told me to pick something else with a little more literary clout. And I'm like, holy shit. He just told me like Stephen King's a piece of shit, essentially. And it forced me to read Bram Stoker's Dracula for whatever that was worth. But I'll never forget that moment for as long as I live. But yeah, that never a course, you know, in English in writing that spoke to me. So it's a huge, yeah. If I saw something like, not even knowing what Bizarro was, if I seen something that's, you know, intro to Bizarro, I would have jumped all over it.
Yeah. No, it's fun. It's definitely different. I have, like, this idea where I think in high school, in college, I think they could teach more literary stuff. But I think in high school English, they should just teach genre fiction. Because no high schooler wants to read literary fiction, and they're not going to care or enjoy it. I mean, few will, but, like, when I was in high school, I fucking hated it.
Yes.
But like when I was in college, I started, like, now I read literary fiction for fun. I think it's amazing. I'm a few years out of like college.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, just like, I don't know. I think high school, they should teach. I get that like Stephen King's extreme and like language or sex or whatever's with like high school and rules and that sort of thing. But right. You want to get kids to read, teach them like weird shit when they're young. And then once they're in college, then start teaching them literary fiction.
Yeah, I mean, that's like my exact life. Like, I spent so much time in school not wanting to read the shit they wanted me to read. And until I took it upon myself to go out to a bookstore or a library and read the thing that I wanted to read. And then all of a sudden it was like, I'll read this stuff all day long. I don't want to read the fucking life of Ivan Denisovich. Fuck that thing. I don't care. I really don't care. You know, when I'm a sophomore in high school, I don't care about Shakespeare. I understand the importance. I understand its historical impact. I don't care. I'm in high school. if I could have read Clive Barker, Stephen King, Dean Koontz, all that stuff and written about it, I could have got so much more behind my work in English class. And then, like, yeah, you said, like, then take that into college where you have a healthy yearning to devour English works, and then you can get into the more challenging stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, I just think teaching really, like, really great texts, classics are like classic. They're really incredible works of literature, but unless you're at a point in life, especially with like today and just action packed life is, and we're always busy and we're always doing stuff and what's going on with films and the excitement in movies and things like that. If you're teaching like classic literature to young people, I just often, like, very rarely do they care. And I think, like, get them, if you want to get people to read, teach them exciting shit when they're young. And then once they're older, let them get into the like good stuff.
Yeah. I mean, that's where a class like yours is, it works, because it's, look, this is the stuff that you're watching on Comedy Central or Cartoon Network in book form. So let's all sit down. Let's all talk about it. And then when you do get out there into the real world, you can translate all you've learned here about writing that and then write for these shows. You know, that's the leap and to get everybody on board with it. It makes sense.
Definitely.
Love it. I'm so happy that Professor Bizarro is in the house. Mr. Andrew, Professor Andrew James Stone. Unfortunately, we're out of time, but I mean, we've had a wonderfully healthy discussion about everything you're up to date with now. So as we've learned, Professor Andrew James Stone, the author of All Hail the House Gods, how cool would it have been to have been in college and have like the cool ass professor that just wrote the most hippest freaking book out there in Bizarro right now. I would have just I'd have been in your class all day long. I've been like a giddy little schoolgirl. You would have had to worry about me.
It'd be great.
It would be great. Wonderful. So I hope you have that experience. You know, maybe that weird Indiana Jones experience where the girl in the front row blinks at you and she's got some kind of weird message written on her eyelids. Something cool like that. I hope that happens because Andrew James Stone, when you next appear on Bazong, I want to hear all about it.
I will be happy to tell you everything there is to tell.
Wonderful. So, again, great, good luck. Best of luck to you. You've already got all the luck you need with regard to the new book, All Hail the House Gods. Continued success. And I look forward to talking to you again when the next hot thing comes out from Andrew James Stone.
Thank you so much. And I look very much forward to speaking with you again as well.
Mr. Andrew James Stone. I hate to see him go, but I love to watch him leave, Zongers. Not because I'm a male chauvinistic pig, which I probably am, but because I know by letting Mr. Andrew James Stone go, he'll write another book and once again return to Bazong. And who could ask for more than that? And maybe he does have a nice butt that is enjoyable to watch as he walks away. That I do not know as of current because I have not met him or his butt in person yet. But it is on my bucket list to be sure, Zongers, as well as checking out all your butts as well. And there's a great way I can check out your butt, Zongers, and that's to get your butt into a seat at Scares That Cares this August 3rd through the 5th, and particularly on the 4th, where Bazong Live will be taking place at Scares That Cares Live, where I will be presenting Bazong in its original concepted format as a game show. We are going to have 1 hour of fun in which I hope, but not really, that once again Bazong ends on a note where last year when I did Bazong Live, as soon as I said, thanks for joining us, give us the gong, and then the fire alarm went off in the hotel in which they cleared out the entire hotel. Bazong, burning down the house, maybe once again this year. I don't really want that to happen, not for the benefits of the guest or the host of Scares That Care, but it is kind of cool that that happened with such impeccable timing last year's honors. So on that note, I do, in that little tiny small instance, hope that that happens, and not that there's any real fires or anything. Zongers, I'm just talking a lot. Zongers, if you do want to get your butts checked out at Scares That Care by me, Mr. Frank, be sure to go to the Project Entertainment Network's web store where you can get yourself some awesome Bazong merchandise, including the one of a kind, the sexiest of all the podcast entertainment networks podcasts leggings. That is the Bazong leggings. They are the sexiest of all the podcasts on the Project Entertainment Network, if I do say so myself. And if you want to extra sexy them up, you will throw your butt into them and show up at Scares That Cares, where I can check out your sexy butt in sexy Bazong tights, and you are guaranteed, Zongers, to get picked to be a contestant on Bazong Live there. That's my personal guarantee to you. Zongers, it ain't sexist, it's sex sells. The beautiful people, as Marilyn Manson once stated. And if you play the album on repeat, he says it a lot. Zongers, shop the store. Be there at Scares That Care if you can. And Zongers, if you can't, I will be presenting the Bazong Live recording. Hopefully, if all goes well, I have procured recording equipment to try and make this a reality, as unfortunately, like I couldn't do last year. So hopefully all goes well this year with Bazong Live. Otherwise, you're going to be part, once again, of a one-of-a-kind, once-in-a-lifetime-you-had-to-be-there experience of Bazong Live. But if all goes well, in 2 weeks, Zongers, because I will be traveling back on next broadcast day, and you will probably get a Mr. Frank show next Monday. And I'm just saying, probably, unless something changes in the short few days that I am still in studio. So that's how that's all going to roll out. Zongers, Bazong Live, be there or be square and be here 2 weeks from now where you might actually get to hear it and experience it if you couldn't be there in Williamsburg, Virginia. And until then, Zongers, you are now free to go and listen to these other great Project Entertainment Network podcasts.
May I have your attention for the morning announcements? Please be advised the Lunch Ladies Book Club is coming to Project Entertainment Network. Join Shelley, Mimsy and Ashley as they dish out a deep review of a book. Horror. thrillers, whatever they want to read and review. A blonde, a brunette, and a redhead walk into a bookstore and they're serving up hot book reviews. The Lunch Ladies Book Club, coming soon, exclusively on Project Entertainment Network. Would you now stand for the national anthem?
Don't get your lunch money stolen!
Ladies and gentlemen, Project Entertainment Network presents The Mondo Method.
For an old man with a goatee teaches a younger guy with a beard how to write.
Introducing first, he's the mentor and the greatest manager of all time, Mondo Guerrero. And from parts unknown, up-and-coming superstar, the Great Buddha.
Okay, so maybe their names are really just Armand Rosamilia and Chuck Buddha, and maybe you'll learn something while they're at it.
Wednesdays exclusively on Project Entertainment Network.
This has been an exclusive presentation of the Project Entertainment Network.